I'm here in Derry Lynn and I'm talking to Betty Leonards. Betty, you were living here and you were married to one of the Leonards.
Yeah.
So what was your maiden name?
I was Betty Monaghan.
Oh, where did you come from?
Oh, Killymaud.
So you moved down here then, did you? Or you?
No, actually I lived we moved over to Fárquhia and I was working. I was about 19 at the time. And had been in England for years, and I'd been in France and different places. And I met in with Louis, and he worked locally in a butcher shop. And at the time, I was working in the local factory. And we were going out for about 5 years maybe. And we got married in 1972, early 1972. And we set up a butcher shop in Easter 1972 in the village of Derry Lynn. We were living in the Knox in Lisniskee, and then we had a baby. I had toxemia and was in the hospital for a month at the time. So whenever I came out of hospital, I was helping him in the butcher shop, and my mother was looking after the baby. And my sister came home from Australia the 7th of December with her family, with a view to living in Ireland. They had been in Australia for many years, and they decided to come back to live here. And we were all living in Mummy's house at the time. There was myself and Louis and Tony, the baby, and my brother Liam, who owned the house, and my mother, and then my sister and her husband and her three children. So it was quite crowded. It was a very small house. And the reason we were living there was because we were working very long hours. It was coming up to Christmas, and we needed to do all the deliveries. I used to do the deliveries over to Lisniskee, and we used to work all hours God gave us. We came over about 8 o'clock in the morning when we were coming from Lisniskee, and we didn't get home till 11 o'clock at night. So it was easier for us to stay with my mother, so that's why we were living there at the time. And then on the 15th of December, my sister and I were in Enniskillen shopping, and came back, and Louis said to me, we have to do the deliveries because I have to do the turkeys. So I was helping him with the deliveries, and about 9 o'clock at night, it was a bit late. Normally I would have went earlier on the Saturday night to do the deliveries, but that particular night it was late because of the busyness, I suppose, at the place. And there were two young fellows, or three of them maybe, and they were footballers, and they were saying to Louis before I left, gosh, somebody could come in and rob you. And he said, I have the knives and I know how to use them. Now, a bomb had gone off before I left for Lisniskee, and I was a little bit anxious about it, but bombs were going off quite a bit at the time, so I suppose...
So where did it go off?
In Lisniskee, in the town. So when I got to the town, I was stopped by the soldiers. I had a van, and I actually had live turkeys in the van. And I said to the soldiers, be careful opening that door because the turkeys will hop out. And I did my deliveries all round Newton Butler and Lisniskee and the Knox. And on my way back, I think it was about 11 o'clock, I was coming out of Lisniskee, and suddenly there was a car behind me and it was flashing lights and arms wagging up and down. And I realised it was the police. And I thought I had killed somebody in the town. And when the policeman came up, he came up with a gun, of course, and he did frighten me. But he said he got a shock when he saw it was a woman, was my impression. He didn't say that, but it was my impression. I said to him, God bless us, have I killed somebody in the town, or what's this about? So he asked me for my license and all the usual, and then he let me go. And I was apprehensive, to say the least. So when I got back to the butcher shop, the lights were out. And it was very unusual because Louis worked, as I say, he would have worked till I come back anyway. And if there had been any reason for him to leave, he would have left word somewhere to let me know. So I popped over to the pub and it was packed, and I saw a friend of mine, and I said to him, you didn't happen to see Louis? And he said, no. He said, why is he not there? And I said, no, he's not. So as I came out of the pub, there was a woman sitting in a car. Poor woman's deceased now. And she shouted at me and she said, are you looking for Louis? And I said, I am. Well, she said, he's gone off with two men in a car. Are they not friends of his? I thought that was very unusual. So I went down home to my brother and I said to him, would you come up with me? Louis's not in the shop. and we'll have a look. And he brought a lamp up and he shone it in through the window, and he could see where his jacket was hanging on the back of the door. So I wanted him to break in, but he didn't want to break in. Maybe he was right. So we went back down to the house again, and I didn't want to create a fuss because my mother was not that well, even though she wasn't too old, but she was never very well at that point in time. And my brother-in-law was Hungarian, and he had escaped from Hungary twice and recaptured. And when he got away altogether, he was glad and he wouldn't go back again. So I didn't want him to get all fussed up about it. And Louis wouldn't have wanted a fuss, so I was trying to do it quietly. So I spoke to Mummy and I said, Louis's not there, so we're going over to his home place, or to Hughes, the brother, maybe, to see if he's there. So we went over to Hughes, and they were in bed, but this stage was maybe 12:30. And I said, Louis's not there. You wouldn't happen to know where he is? And he said, no. But he said, sure, we'll wait till morning, and you can tell the police in the morning, whatever, if he's not turned up. So we went home and went to bed, and I said to Mummy, now you waken me early in the morning. She sat up all night, and 9 o'clock in the morning, my sister and I went to Canoli Barracks to report him missing. And the policeman said to me, sure, he's probably gone off with another woman. And I said, I don't think so, that's not Louis' style. So I was wanting them to get, at the time that it happened, there were people being found behind hedges and ditches, and I thought the helicopter should have been up straight away to search, but they really didn't take me that seriously. So I went back, came home, and went over to Leonard's house, and Louis's brother was in jail at the time with three others, and the mother had gone off to visit him. So there was only the father there and I think two of the brothers. Anyway, in the meantime, Hugh and the brother-in-law, Tom, and Kieran, younger brother, came over to the butcher shop, and they broke in and they found Louis dead in the shop.
So the circumstances there was how brutally he was killed. So did you, when you heard that, did it...
When I came back to the shop, I was with Louis's sister and my brother, and we had Jerry West with us, who used to work for us. We'd picked him up to bring him over to the shop. And when I arrived, the shop was full of people. And I met Hugh coming out, and he was wild. He ended up in hospital because he was so upset. His wife was having a baby that week as well.
So that was his brother.
That was his brother. Yeah. And he was after finding Louis.
Yeah.
And I met the doctor and the priest. And the priest said, what did he say now? Whatever he said, the doctor said, it's just murder, bloody murder. Mm-hmm. And my fear was that this murderer was still around. And I was trying to check on where everybody was to make sure they were safe. It was the most peculiar feeling. I suppose maybe it was shock, I'm not so sure, but it was all unreal. And then I remember searching and going over to Louis's house and seeing was he there, and then I'd come back here, and that went on for quite a while till it registered that he wasn't there.
So was there a message or anything left?
No. About a week before that happened, there was a Captain Rees came into the shop with, I thought it was police, and I'm not sure now, 45 years later, was it police or soldiers. But he asked Louis about a gun. Louis was great for shooting, and he had these guns and he had these dogs. And now I should go back a little bit. About some months previously, the dogs had gone missing from the house in the Knox, and he was very upset by that. And he asked me when I check the local neighbourhood to see where they're about. And I went round the houses with a local woman who knew every house. And eventually went to this house, and I asked if the woman had seen the dogs, and she said not. But I could hear the dogs barking in the room. And next thing they came out. And I had discovered afterwards that the soldiers used to visit this house. So we presumed the soldiers took the dogs for whatever reason.
But tell me, why, first of all, tell me, was there anybody ever held accountable for
Well, that's why I'm suing the government at the minute, because the HET, the Historical Inquiries team, came down here and did a whole big report. We have it on file. And spent many hours in my house going through different things. And they have actually named the people to us who actually carried it out.
Do you mind telling me?
I can't tell it because we're going through the court system. They came from Belfast, so they're not local. But the police were told that after Louis was killed, they were given these names, they were told where they came from, they were told the number of the car that was used. He never arrested them. If he had, Jim Murphy could have been saved, please God. He got into the car when they were charged with a robbery in Bow, and they were at Enniskillen Courthouse. And the detective inspector got into the car to question them about Louis's murder, which he knew or been told by three different sources that carried them out. And the solicitor for these men told them to get out, and that was it. So the reason that I'm suing the government is because they didn't protect Louis and they didn't carry out their investigation properly.
Okay, so why do you think he was targeted then? Why?
Well,
him?
I'm told a policeman in Belfast target told the UVF that Louis was a suspect.
Well, why was he a suspect?
One of the reasons may have been, I'm not terribly sure, but in July of that same year, I think it was July, sometimes the dates get wrong.
That's okay.
His brother and three others were found by the army on the road, and there were guns found under the car. So they were already in jail. They got 8 years in jail. And a man who worked for the agricultural department worked with a UDR man, and he told him it was Louis was caught, but it was actually his brother. So that may have had some bearing on it, but he was a suspect.
And, you know, it was, so you can imagine, was he a member?
He was a member of the IRA, yes.
Yeah. So it was terrible. Now, I know it got an awful lot of publicity when it happened because of the brutality of it, and discovering your husband
who was just lying on the floor. You're shot. And
so, I mean, but it was terrible what happened. And so did you, how did it affect you? Was there a long-term effect? Obviously, there's something like this just doesn't go away.
No. Well, I suppose I had several problems. One, I had the baby still to look after, even though my sister was there and my mother. Two, I had the butcher shop to keep going because we had to open up again. We had all this meat and turkeys and what have you. And that had to be all sorted. So I wasn't a butcher, but I had to get help. And the help was erratic. It was very, very difficult. Then my sister was going back to Australia because brother-in-law, who was Hungarian, had escaped from Hungary, wasn't going to hang about, so he went back to Australia straight away. My mother was ill. She wasn't able to look after the baby. So in a way, I suppose all those problems superseded. I didn't have time to be sorrowful. I remember for about 3 months when I go to bed, everything was bright during the night, and when I get up in the morning, everything was black. I think that lasted about 3 months from what I can gather. And I do remember driving in and out the road from the butcher shop home and screaming. I wasn't able to pray. I was screaming at our Lord, you know.
Angry, yeah.
Angry. So I'd say, how did I just coped on adrenaline, I suppose, really. Mm. You know, every day just hoping this nightmare would go away, but it wasn't going away. And then when my sister left with the family, that I was completely bereft because that was Easter and I just didn't know how I was going to cope. My brother was a great help. I suppose the Leonards were a great help as well. I really don't know. Looking back now, I don't know how I coped.
Oh, you coped, yeah. And did you keep this bottled up inside? Or, I mean, would you have spoken to many people about it?
No, I wouldn't really have spoken to anybody. Ever. There was no such thing as counselling that time. You just had to get on with things, and I suppose in a way, while ours was brutal and it was Christmas and there was a baby and all of that, there was so many others as well at the time that were suffering, that I suppose it wouldn't have been like an isolated incident, if you know what I mean.
I know, yes. And so, were you bitter against the authorities, the UDR?
We were harassed continuously from then on. In fact, I remember saying to the HET, I used to think I was actually the perpetrator, not the victim. In fact, I told the judge that in court, the first court case we had, because we had raids at 6 o'clock in the morning. I remember one morning, we were still living in my brother's house, because I never went back to the Knox. And I remember the thumping on the door at 6 o'clock, and it was a dark winter's night morning, actually. And it was terrifying. And they burst in. Only my brother's very calm individual. Next thing, they're up in the attic, and his attic was very small. And they took this pile of stuff down and put it in a black bin liner. And I remember we had an outside toilet at the time, and my son wanted to go to the toilet. He was about 18 months. And when I went out, there was a row of Saracens down along the road, and I thought, Mother of God, have I killed somebody? And that happened many times. And it really was scary.
It
was just awful.
And did you find that in your situation that you got lots of local support? Did people come to you and
yes,
look
yes,
after you?
Yes and no. Yes and no, because I remember that particular time being shocked because people drove past and didn't come in. But having said that, there were two incidents happened. One was at the Lisinski checkpoint. I was going to Mass one evening, and they pulled me in. Every time you were held up constantly, and they pulled me in and wouldn't let me go. And a local lady came along, and she said, "Are you going to Mass?" I said, "I am." She said, "Hop in here." And they started roaring, shouting at her. So I said, "No, just go on." But the other incident at Ballyconnell, I think, is fairly important. Tony was coming home from Dublin, and he asked me, would I pick him up in Ballyconnell? So I drove up as far as the checkpoint and again pulled in, stopped. I must have been there 15, 20 minutes. I was panicking because I knew he'd be waiting on me. So these ladies came along in a car and they shouted at me, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I'm not. I need to get into Ballyconnell." So they said, "Hop in and we'll take you." And I left the car and locked it. Now, they dropped me in Ballyconnell, and when I came back, we walked over the hill and I could see them around the car like flies. And I said, "Tony, don't say a word. They've done something with the car." So when I came down, they smashed the windscreen. And I said to him, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "We thought there was a bomb in the car." And I said, "Common sense would have told you if there was a bomb in the car, it would have went up when you broke the windscreen." But I discovered recently that those people that gave me the lift were harassed continuously afterwards. So it was this.
Okay,
so if ever people did try to help, I would say to them, "Don't. Just go on, because you're going to get harassed as well."
Yeah.
For helping me. But it was really difficult going to work in the mornings. I remember continuously you'd be kept late because you'd be held up on the road. And my brother-in-law was in Clonus after he got out of jail. One of them were living in Clonus. And my mother-in-law and I used to go over to visit them. And every time we'd come home, they would pull us in and keep us there for about an hour or 2 hours. And it was all very irritating. So when you ask me, had I a vengeance against the security forces? Yes and no. I wasn't sure to then kill Louis, but the hassle that I was getting was desperate, annoying. I was trying to get on with my life, and they just wouldn't let me. But the more they wouldn't let me, the more determined I was. And I did.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the funeral that morning? Talk to me about it, the funeral.
I can vaguely remember it, other than Desmond was in jail at the time and he got out for the funeral. And
Who's Desmond?
Desmond, Louis' brother that was in jail.
Oh, yes.
That I told you about. Now, I didn't tell you, his aunt had been in hospital all that summer. She had cancer, and she actually was dying in November, and some of them, the court case was going on at the time for Desmond and the boys. And I remember one of the times they came back from the court, and it was said to the aunt, The boys have got 8 years, and she's telling me at least they'll be safe. That all is stuck in my mind. Now, she was buried in early November, and then the next funeral was 15th of December. And
safe in the sense that they were in jail and they couldn't carry out any...
No, in the sense that they wouldn't be killed.
Oh, yes.
You
yes,
see,
yes.
That they were safe because there was nobody going to kill them. And Desmond got out of jail, but he had the... somebody with him, it must have been a priest, I think, I'm not sure, and they let him stay till 5 o'clock. But all I can remember is walking along the road, and there was a very, very big crowd, but there were absolutely no trappings, is what you mean, of any involvement in anything, because at that time it was all very new. You know, it wasn't like years later when...
there was a volley of shots fired over the coffin.
Yeah, but not in Lewis. There was none of that.
Or a flag draped over
none of that. No, yeah. He was a footballer. Yeah. He was the captain of the football team. He was very well got in the area. He was really interested in community, youth, and all of that.
But how deeply involved was he in the movement?
Well, the movement had only started a short time before that, so there wasn't really much involvement anyway. Whatever he'd done, I wouldn't have known. He would have kept everything from me because I was busy getting on with my duties. And
were you angry that he was involved, or were you just
no,
you
because
just left him do it?
Well, we were involved in civil rights in 1968. I was only 22, and I'd been in England for some years before that. But it always irritated me that as a Catholic, I didn't have a vote. I couldn't get a house. I couldn't get a job. Our local postman was the sergeant and the B-men. He would come into our house in the morning and get tea with the post. We'd go to the cinema at night and he'd stop us on the road and ask us our names. It used to really irritate me that civil rights didn't exist when I was growing up. My father was a convert, my mother was a Catholic, my father was a Northern Protestant, and he converted to Catholicism. They were both pacifists, they were both royalists, they loved the Queen and all of that. And all of that really annoyed me. I don't know where that came from, but when civil rights started, that's when we got out and we demonstrated every time there was a demonstration, because we wanted civil rights. We stood at the barricades and we got stoned by our neighbours who were on the other side continuously, and that only made you more and more determined to get civil rights.
Yeah.
So being in the IRA was a continuation of that, because civil rights wasn't working. It wasn't going to work, so you had to do something more. That's where that came from. But it had only started up at the time, so by the time Louis was killed, it wasn't hardly even off the ground. And yeah. I presume, I'm only saying that, I don't really know.
Okay.
Because
what about your own interest then, Betty? Did you keep up with the...
Well, I would have kept up as a nationalist.
Yeah.
Some things I can't really say. I don't want to get in too much to that end of it. But I would have, I suppose, I had great faith. That was my big thing. I was always very loyal to the church. I always went to daily mass if I could go. So my faith kept me going more than anything else at that time. Yes, people would have supported me a lot, but I would have been very busy. And maybe I didn't have time for being angry and being, you know... my sorrow took a different shape, I suppose.
Of course. Yeah, it's just sometimes the anger can come out. And sometimes two wrongs don't make a right either, you know?
No, I'd never have thought of anything. No, I'd never been angry like that. I was always too busy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, somebody asked me one time, where did the resilience come from? And I think it must have come from my mother. She would have been very resilient. And I think with her support, then she died in 1975, so I was back to square one again. And I had to give up the butcher shop, and my sister said, you're going to have to do something. So she said, why not go back and train as a teacher, which is what I did.
I know.
So yeah, that was new life.
And so what did you teach?
I taught business studies.
Where?
All over Fermanagh. I was never in school in Fermanagh. But when I went back in 1978, it was like a whole new life, because I was along with 16-year-old students, and it was just a wonderful life. I sort of came alive again, maybe.
Yeah.
I think I died in between then, 1972 to 1978, and then I got this new life.
Because it all happened so soon in the Troubles, really.
I suppose I didn't want to be seen as a victim. That was one of... I had cancer last year, and I didn't want to be seen as a cancer victim. And I had the same at that time.
Yeah.
I wanted to prove there was something more than being an IRA man's widow.
Yeah.
That's where I was coming from. Now, he wasn't claimed to be an IRA man for about 6 or 12 months after.
Yeah.
So that's when it came out. So I suppose in between that time, we didn't
But really the whole idea of his name and so on being used as a symbol, are you happy with that? Do you like to see
he's more used more as symbol football rather than anything else in my book, I suppose, because the team, the football field in Doan is called after him.
Yeah, yes.
And they're going to change it into an Irish name.
But the monument, there's a monument to...
There's a monument, yeah.
Yeah.
He would have been a leader. Louis was a leader always, and people looked up to him. He had that, I suppose, charisma about him. He had a way of being, but he was more interested in people. He wasn't joining the IRA for his own benefit. He wanted it for other people. He wanted a free Ireland for everyone else.
Okay.
It wasn't for himself, because how would you describe it? He just wanted civil rights for people.
Yeah.
That's really what he was about. And people knew that. They knew that he was there. He was always there. He helped set up the football team. He was the captain. He was helping young people, keeping them out of trouble, because the young fellas looked up to him because of his football. He was dedicated to his football team and to his parents and his family. So it was because of civil rights was what he was wanting. So in that respect, that's why I would be proud that the monument is there.
And the you know, if you're caught in a situation as he was, you know, it turned into a bitter fight, really. People get hurt, people get killed, and he just happened to be one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my grandchildren wouldn't have the life they have now, only that happened, and others as well. I know it was terribly unfortunate for the like of me and people like me, but it couldn't have continued the way it was. What kind of a life would we have with no jobs, no house, no vote, no nothing? We were second, third, fourth class citizens. That wasn't right.
Yeah.
And that's what we were fighting for, to get civil rights. Now when I see my grandchildren having all the same as everyone else, having everything that's good about life, I think only that we suffered, they wouldn't have had that.
Yeah. I can understand how you feel, and it's for me. It's a learning curve. I'm discovering what drove these people to do what they did. So
desperation, maybe it's a strong word, but it's not that strong when you think that at 16, 17, 18 years of age, you come out of school and there was nothing. We had absolutely nothing. My neighbours were big Protestants. They had loads of land. They had 5 votes. We had 7 children and 2 adults and no vote.
Mm.
We had no say in the government. We had no say in anything. We the only thing we had was our faith.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't right. It couldn't be right. We were so poor. We had absolutely nothing. Not just us, but in our community. We were a small Catholic community of about 20 or 30 houses, and we were all the same.
Living here in Derry?
In Achillimod.
Oh, yes.
And there was no way out.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see other countries, I know what that's like when they have no way out through poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Education, not a hope, because we couldn't afford it. Now my grandchildren are going to university. It's wonderful. I would help them pay to get them educated, because we couldn't afford to be educated. I passed exams to go to the local college. I couldn't go because my mother couldn't afford to send me.
Yeah.
That's why I went back to education twice.
So, Betty, you're you're a nationalist here in Northern Ireland. So do you hold a British passport? Is that something you do?
An Irish passport.
And so, but you're living in a different country, in a sense.
My late husband used to say, if you put chickens in the oven and bake them, do you call them buns? I think that explains it. Now, I should say I'm part of a peace group, and we went to South Africa, and we were made up of all sorts of opinions. There was UDA, IRA, INLA, soldiers, police, guards, people from the south, north, etc. And the end result for me was that I have a very good friend who is a Free Presbyterian in Monaghan, and she's still involved in that, and I, her and I work through each other. So we have come a long way.
Yeah.
So while I'm a nationalist, I definitely want us to be more cross-community, and I try everything in my power to do that.
There are people who, say in the Protestant community, who are doing things. The widows of RU sea soldiers that were shot and killed, and they're making tapestries. Is there anything that the widows of victims in your side, are you doing anything to...
No. There was a blanket done, and my mother-in-law contributed something to that. It's not called a blanket. I forget what it's called.
Tapestry.
That's the only thing that I can think of. But no, we haven't really anything like that. We have a knitting group and a sewing group and different groups here in the village of Derry Lynn, and we've cross-community there.
Yeah.
So we are, and we've a dancing group as well. It's in the Protestant Hall, and we go to that as well. So we are trying our best to be cross-community.
And are you? Do you find, though, that it's easier, or is it getting harder? Is it still very toxic? Is it still... Do you feel the troubles are still there, or here, that they haven't gone away? I mean, we have the Good Friday Agreement and that, but do you think people still don't trust each other, or are they...
Some. I think when you scratch the surface, maybe underneath, there is still stuff there. But we can only but try. I guess it'll take another couple of decades to get rid of all of that. Again, I'll go back to the grandchildren. They don't really know anything about the troubles as such, and they have friends who are Protestants and all sorts of people, so they have a whole different agenda. So for them growing up, I think it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, even though their grandfather was killed in the troubles, here's the priest back again.
Okay. Okay. No, I let that out. It's all right.
But, sorry, you can live in that.
I will, yeah.
Yes and no,
yes.
I suppose. It's not really evident here the way it would be in Belfast or Derry, I think, and more so in Belfast. But so we are trying our best to do as much as we can across community.
Good.
And I think it's succeeding.
Betty Leonard, thank you. I know it wasn't easy, but listen, it's lovely to talk to you. And
that's good.
Thank you. Thank you indeed.